Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Highland Dawn by Donna Grant, narrated by Ruth Urquhart. In a time of conquering, there will be three who will end the MacNeil line. Three born of the Imbolc, Beltane and Lunasa feasts, who will destroy all at the Samhain, the Feast of the Dead. One who refuses the Druid way inherits the winter, in doing so marks the beginning of the end. For the worthy to prevail, the fire must stand alone to vanquish the inheritor. Water must soothe the savage beast, and the wind must bow before the tree. Prologue. Sinclair Castle, Highlands of Scotland, February 3, 1607. Time was running out. Moira ran as fast as her little legs would carry her as she brushed aside her tears. Her sister's cry still rung in her ears as she found the hidden door and slipped inside the castle to run the length of the long, dark tunnel alone. She had to find her parents and her new baby sister. It was her duty as the eldest to make sure both of her sisters were safe and sound. Her da had drilled that into her for as long as she could remember. Never mind the fact she disobeyed him now. She had made it with Fiona into the forest as the castle was attacked. His orders had been to stay there once she had reached the haven of the trees, but she couldn't stop thinking about the new babe, her new sister, only a few hours old. The babe was an innocent, and Moira wouldn't be able to live with herself if she didn't get the babe to the forest with Fiona. Moira reached the door that would open into the hallway by her chamber. With shaking hands, she eased it open and listened. Cheers rose up from below in the bailey. The castle had been taken, and even though she was only a child, her young mind grasped that her life at Sinclair Castle would forever be changed. After looking down the darkened hallway, she slid out of the tunnel and quietly shut the door behind her. She pinned herself against the wall and slowly made her way to her parents' chamber. She finally reached the chamber, but couldn't make her legs obey her. She didn't need to look inside to know her parents were dead. She knew it, as surely as she knew that her life would most likely end this night. Just as she was about to turn away, she heard Fiona's screams in her mind. For her sisters, she would face the horror inside the chamber. For her sisters, she would do anything, so long as they got to stay together. With her resolve in place, Moira took a deep breath and stepped into the chamber. Her mouth opened in a silent scream as she saw her parents lying motionless on the floor. She looked down and found herself standing in blood, her parents' blood. Run, her mind screamed, but she couldn't. She had to find her sister. She blinked away her tears and searched for the babe. Her mother had kept the babe with her since the birth, so Moira knew she would be here. Yet she wasn't. It didn't matter how hard she looked, she couldn't find the infant. She went to the wooden cradle that her da had built and kneeled beside it. The blanket her mother had knitted was still inside, but it was no longer wrapped so lovingly around her sister. Tears Moira had refused to shed blinded her as she stared into the empty cradle. Not only had she lost her parents and her baby sister, but she also knew she had lost Fiona. She closed her small hand around the only thing she had left of her family, the silver cross that hung beneath her gown. When she heard footfalls, she didn't bother to look up. Death would be welcome. She had failed her da and failed in her promise to protect her sisters with her own life. Yet it wasn't a blade, but strong arms that lifted her into a safe embrace.
Shh, little one, the deep voice whispered in her ear. You are safe now.
She tried to look at her saviour through her tears, but could only see eyes such a bright blue they glowed in the darkness. His voice soothed her. With a nod, she leaned her head against his shoulder. The soft and unfamiliar texture of his vest rested against her cheek.
Where are you taking me?
she finally asked, as he hurried down the hallway.
To your destiny.
When they emerged from the secret door that a short while ago she had led Fiona through, she found another man waiting for them. She recognized him instantly. He was Frang, a druid high priest that had visited her parents often.
I've come to take you home, Frang said.
My home is here.
Not anymore, lass.
I have to find Fiona,
she said, and tried to wiggle out of her saviour's arms.
Nay, little one,
his deep calming voice said near her ear. Frang touched her arm.
Stay, Moira. It will do you no good to go looking for Fiona. She is safe with Cormac MacDougall.
Gone,
she whispered, though she knew it to be true.
She cannot be gone. I promised her I would come back.
"'Tisn't safe,' Frang said, but he was speaking to her saviour. "'We must get her to the Druid's Glen immediately.'
"'I've lost everyone,'
she said, and let the tears fall again. She didn't struggle when her saviour held her a little tighter, as if giving her his strength. She welcomed his warmth and power, for she had neither at the moment, and wondered if she ever would.
Chapter 1. Western Highlands, August 1625.
Now that's a man I'd lay claim to.
Moira jerked her head up from examining an apple, but the old crone who she thought had spoken began to mumble to herself as she set out more fruit from beneath tables. Moira looked around the open marketplace to find herself alone, except for the crone. She looked at the old woman once more, but the crone went about stacking fruit and waving to people as they passed in front of her wobbly shop. Moira shook her head and went back to her examination of the fruit. After many weeks of travel, she and D'Artaeus had finally arrived at the small fishing town that belonged to the MacLeods. They were on the last stage of their journey, or at least she hoped that was the case.
Aye, a man like him could warm even these old bones.
This time when Moira raised her eyes, the woman stared at her. Gone was the appearance of a doddering old woman, and in her place stood one with wise brown eyes. She followed the crone's gaze to D'Artaeus. Moira had been ignoring her travelling companion for weeks, but witnessing him smiling and talking to a village girl did little to ease her. His rugged, almost harsh face was transformed with that smile. His wide, thin lips were actually tilted up in a wide grin, showing white, even teeth.
"Is he yours?"
She turned back to the crone.
"Nay."
"I would say he was," the crone said, and reached out gnarled fingers to touch Moira's hand. "I spotted the two of you as you entered the village. He watches you like you belong to him."
"You are mistaken."
Yet her eyes sought out D'Artaeus again. His shoulder-length wavy brown hair blew gently in the sea wind.
"He is my guide, nothing more," she replied, and went back to examining the apple.
"'Twas not good to lie to oneself. You have done it far too long."
Moira narrowed her eyes at the woman. There were few people she took advice from, but every fibre of her being urged her to listen to the crone.
"You have a long journey ahead of you."
Moira laughed. The woman was a fraud.
"You are the one mistaken, crone. I have been on a long journey. 'Tis about to end."
"So you think. In reality, your journey has yet to begin."
Her words halted Moira. She searched the woman's brown eyes.
"You have the sight."
"I do, and you'd be wise to heed me. Listen to your heart. It will guide you when the darkness comes."
"What do you know? Tell me,"
Moira said, and grabbed the crone's arm. The curtain behind the crone parted and admitted a young girl with hair the colour of fire and eyes so green they would rival emeralds.
"My granddaughter,"
the crone said after the girl sat. Moira raised her eyes to the old woman. Tell me what you know.
I sense immense power in you, child. You have a great destiny to fulfil, and there is little doubt you will fulfil it.
Moira stood in awe. The sight was always a gift she had wanted. Both of her sisters had received it. Glenna had visions, whereas Fiona had dreams, but that gift had not come to Moira.
Does your gift reside in your granddaughter?
Moira asked to change the subject. Whenever she encountered someone who had the sight, it put her off guard.
Nay, thank the saints. She does, however, have the gift of healing, but nothing that compares to ye.
Moira once again found the woman's gaze on her.
What makes you think I have any healing ability?
The old crone barked with laughter.
It fairly glows in ye. A person with the right eyes can see it. 'Tis been many years since I've come across a true druid.
Moira quickly looked around to see if anyone had overheard the crone.
You will have me hung with your loud ramblings.
It isn't likely. No one pays me any attention unless they have a sickness they cannot cure. Then they seek me and my granddaughter.
What is her name?
Moira asked the crone. There was something about the child that drew her interest.
Isabel.
The child looked up at her name. There was no mistaking the sad eyes that gazed at Moira.
And what of her future?
The crone turned until her back was to Isabel.
The road ahead of her is full of peril. I fear she will not survive it.
The crone's face, which had been lined with worry, suddenly blossomed into a bright smile. Then Moira heard the voice that always made her heart flutter.
Did you locate some fruit?
She turned to find Darteus beside her. She was taller than the average woman, but still he towered over her so that he blocked the sun. The urge to ask the crone about Darteus was almost overwhelming.
Moira?
She jerked and turned her head away from him.
I did.
Good. The boat leaves tomorrow morning at the tide.
Moira found herself staring at the crone, who was in turn staring at Darteus.
Mistress?
Moira heard him address the crone.
Did my companion refuse to pay you? Is that why you stare at me?
Not at all, warrior. I simply don't see such fine specimens come across these old eyes any more. If only I was younger,
she said with a cackle. Moira glanced up and found his lips turned in a smile. He smiled so rarely that it always surprised her to see his handsome face turned almost boyish with that smile.
I have never been one to let age stop me.
Moira's mouth dropped open. She had known Darteus almost her entire life, yet this was the first time she had heard him tease someone. The crone laughed.
I bet you leave many a broken heart behind ye.
She winked and touched his hand. Her smile slipped until sadness clouded her eyes.
I'm sorry. I didn't know.
For several heartbeats, Moira looked from the crone to Darteus as they measured each other. Finally, Darteus spoke.
You should be around others like yourself.
Each of us has a road to journey. Mine ended here. My granddaughter's is about to begin. Ye and your companion, she said and glanced at Moira, are about to embark on a long adventure. Whether you will come out of it is yet to be seen.
You know of the prophecy?
Darteus asked. The crone nodded.
One cannot claim to be a druid and not know of the prophecy.
She turned her brown eyes to Moira.
You are one of the three, the eldest. For many years we thought ye dead.
My sisters and I were hidden.
And rightly so, the woman said. Remember my words. Arduous choices are ahead of both of ye. Choose wisely.
If Scotland wants to remain the way it is, we don't have any choice but to come through it. Moira said.
Her nerves were tingling from the intense magic radiating from the woman. Few people exuded that type of magic, and mostly it was the Fae, with the exception of Frang, the druid high priest. She blinked and tried to focus her eyes, but found herself struggling to see.
"Our magic is clashing. You must take her away from me."
Moira heard the crone's voice as though from a distance, even though she knew the woman was but paces from her.
"D'Arteus?"
"I'm here,"
he said, and wrapped an arm around her. She didn't like the fact she enjoyed his strong arm around her. She was a druid priestess, one of the chosen three to fulfill the prophecy. She was strong and didn't need anyone, let alone a man, to help her. Before they left, the basket Moira held became heavier as the crone put fruit into it. Moira pulled away from D'Arteus. He hastily paid the woman as Moira began to slowly walk away. With every step, she began to feel normal.
"Better?"
She smiled at D'Arteus and nodded.
"I have never encountered anyone whose magic affected me so."
"She's more than what she seems."
I thought as much myself, but what, I don't know."
No more was said as they travelled back to their small camp they had made the night before near the city. It was a comfortable silence between them, though. In the weeks since they had departed from the Druid's Glen and her sisters, she had come to know D'Arteus a little better. Though they rarely talked, there was mutual respect. At least, that's what she told herself when there was no conversation. A sound drew her attention. She stopped and listened.
"Moira, what is it?"
D'Arteus asked, as he came to stand beside her.
"A sound."
They stood in silence as she strained to hear it. Just as she was about to give up, she heard it again. Without a word to D'Arteus, she dropped her basket and ran into the forest.
"Moira!"
She didn't have time to answer him, for she knew it was imperative that she reach the sound. She came upon it unexpectedly and nearly passed it. Her hands shook as she pushed aside the bushes and found herself staring into the precious face of an infant. She was about to reach for it when D'Arteus pulled her to her feet.
"Don't touch it. It was left for a reason."
She turned and glared at him.
"What are you seeing?"
she said, and jerked out of his arms.
"'Tis a helpless infant that is about to die because someone has abandoned him."
His face smoothed into his regular, emotionless face.
"Do what you will, then."
Moira fell to her knees and reached for the infant. She was afraid to touch him because she had never held an infant, and she was afraid she was too late, even with her healing powers. As gently as she could, she lifted the tiny infant in her arms. He fussed and snuggled against her as he weakly grasped her finger. Tears stung her eyes as she felt his life force leaving his frail body. She opened the blanket and saw why his parents had left him to die. He had a club foot, nothing that would hamper his living, but it would hamper the parents. Instead of having another hand to help with the chores, they would have another mouth to feed.
"How can anyone do this?"
she said, as the baby stopped crying, pleased to be held again.
"It isn't his fault he was born this way. With proper instruction, he could live a normal life."
"Some people would rather not have to give the proper instruction."
"Then they should never have children," she said, and looked over her shoulder at D'Arteus.
Despite his attempt, finding the baby had affected him as well.
"We are too late. He's all but dead."
"So young. Only days old," Moira said, as she blinked away more tears.
Then a thought occurred to her. She hadn't tried it, but it was worth the risk. She gently laid the baby down, and his whimpering started anew. With a deep breath, she placed her hands palm down over the infant.
"Moira, nay, it's too late for him."
"He still breathes. It isn't too late. You won't change me from the course. I have to try."
She closed her eyes and gave herself to the power surging through her, the power that could heal almost anyone. The power grew until she was blinded from anyone and anything except the infant. The ancient words of the druids filled her mind as she chanted them, bringing her power under her control. With a slight move of her hand, she brought the power through her hand into the infant. He was very near death, and needed almost all of her powers to be pulled back. Several times she had to call the infant to her, because he was so far gone, yet come to her he did, and each time more quickly. When he was fully healed of all malnutrition, she began to see a blue light surrounding him. With a murmur of more ancient druid words, she bade her power return to her. She dropped her hands and looked to find a healthy, sleeping baby in front of her.
"'Tis too bad I cannot fix his foot,' she said, and looked up at D'Arteus. His eyes were softer as they gazed at the infant. Moira took a deep breath and tried to gain her feet when her legs gave out. D'Arteus caught her before she hit the ground.
"'You use too much of your power,' he admonished as he laid her next to the infant.
"'I had to. I have the ability and destiny put him in my path. I had no other choice. He's mine now,' she said, before she fell into a healing sleep.
Chapter 2 D'Arteus gazed down at Moira. He sighed and ran a hand through his hair. What she had done shouldn't surprise him, yet it did. She had changed since finding her sisters, changed so that she wasn't predictable, and that worried him. An unpredictable Moira could get them in all sorts of trouble, never mind that they had a duty to perform that would send most men running the other way. He wondered if they would find the hidden doorway into the world of the Fae, and if they would be able to free the Fae. With another sigh, he bent and lifted Moira in his arms to carry her the rest of the way to their camp when his eyes fell on the sleeping infant. They were going to need milk. He cursed long and hard as he gazed upon Moira and the babe. Things just became complicated, and if his instincts were true, things were going to get much worse. D'Arteus gently set Moira back on the ground before he tilted his head back and let out a whistle. In less than a heartbeat, his horse whinnied in return. D'Arteus heard the horse running through the woods as it searched for him. He sent another shorter whistle, and soon found the horse trotting toward him.
"At least you listen, lad," he said,
as he patted the great black steed.
"Wish I could say the same for Moira."
After he had adjusted the saddle, he bent close to Moira and sat her up. Slowly, her eyes opened.
"Come," he urged. "You'll ride Raven back to camp."
"The babe," she whispered.
"I will carry him. We have much to do. Will you be able to hold on?"
She nodded, and he hastily picked her up and sat her on the black horse. He waited for a moment to make sure she would stay atop the horse before he went back for the infant. Thankfully, their camp wasn't far. Once they reached it, he laid the baby down and reached for Moira. She was asleep before he laid her beside the babe. As carefully as he could, he placed the infant in Moira's arms.
"Watch them, Raven. Keep them safe," he said, as he walked from the camp.
By the time D'Arteus returned, it was well into the afternoon, and he wasn't in a pleasant mood. It had taken more coaxing than he had imagined to get the milk, and as it was, it wouldn't last them long. He had also managed to obtain a bladder skin that had been transformed into a makeshift breast from a peasant. They hadn't been willing to sell it because they were suspicious of why he wanted it, but he could be very persuasive when the need arose. When he walked into their camp, Moira was awake and cooing to the infant. He tried not to notice the gratitude in her eyes when she spotted the milk and bladder.
"Thank you,"
she said, as he handed her the filled bladder.
"I don't understand why you are doing this."
"Don't you?"
she asked, as she placed the end of the bladder on the infant's lips.
"Nay."
He watched as the infant tried to drink, then turned his head away.
"We have a dangerous mission to accomplish, and you want to bring a babe along. Call me a fool, but taking an infant into the Fae world, while trying to find an evil so fierce that he has imprisoned the Fae, is asking for trouble."
For a moment, D'Arteus thought Moira refused to answer him, as she whispered to the infant,
coaxing him to drink. Once the babe began to drink greedily, she raised her druid green eyes to him.
"I'm 84 years old. He is the only way I will ever have a child. My greatest desire lay in front of my eyes, dying. To allow him to die, when I could save him, would have been like tearing my heart out."
Her words were like a spear in his chest. He understood her feelings, and for the life of him he couldn't deny her the babe.
"I'll take care of him," she continued. "You won't have to do a thing. He won't be a hindrance. Please, don't make me leave him."
D'Artaeus stared at her. She had always been beautiful to him, though he'd never allowed her to know it. She was taller than most women, but he liked her height. He didn't have to bend over to speak to her. Her straight flaxen hair fell to her waist, begging him to feel if it was as silky as a falcon's wing. She had a stubborn chin that she lifted any chance she got in thwarting him, which was often. Her lips were full and wide, a lover's lips. But it was her eyes he loved the most. They were the most unusual shade of green. Druid green, Frang had called them. Her eyes held mysteries that even D'Artaeus couldn't begin to understand. From the first moment he had seen her huddled in her parents' chamber that long ago night, he had been entranced by her. She had tugged at his heart even then, and he had known he would have to distance himself from her. Yet, even when he had, she hadn't completely left him. She asked him once why he didn't allow himself to become close to people. He hadn't known how to tell her that he was immortal, that he was tired of watching friends grow old and die. Few knew of his immortality, and he wanted it kept that way.
"D'Artaeus?"
At the sound of her husky voice, he rose to his feet.
"You will need to name him."
Her radiant smile was like a beacon in a black sky. He nodded and turned to the fire.
"I'm going to regret this,"
he mumbled as he stoked the fire to life.
"Have you figured out how we are supposed to find the key that will allow us into the gateway between the worlds?" Moira asked.
"Nay,"
he answered, but he didn't tell her that the old crone had told him they already possessed the key. There hadn't been time to question her, and when he had returned to the village, she was no longer there. His mood didn't improve when the entire village refused to tell him where she lived.
"Jamie!"
"What?"
he asked and turned towards her.
"What do you think about naming him Jamie?"
He looked down at the infant now sleeping cradled in Moira's arms.
"I think it is a fine name."
"Hello, Jamie,"
she said and kissed the top of the babe's head. As D'Artaeus watched Moira, he saw just how much she adored the babe. He had never known she wanted children, had never thought to ask. But in truth, he wouldn't have asked. Theirs wasn't the type of relationship that would qualify as friendship. He found himself fascinated by the tiny thing wrapped so lovingly in Moira's arms. It amazed him that something so little could put a smile on her face. She had smiled and talked more in the last couple of hours than she had the entire time they had been on this journey. Moira couldn't stop gazing at Jamie. He was the most beautiful thing she had ever seen, yet she couldn't enjoy him as she wanted, not with what she had to accomplish. Her eyes found D'Artaeus as he lounged against a tree as if he didn't have a care in the world, though she knew he kept a constant vigil on her with his hawk's vision. There had been a time she would have moved the heavens for him, but he hadn't wanted her. She pushed aside old hurts as her worry over finding the key filled her. After she placed Jamie down so he could sleep, she rose and walked to D'Artaeus. He jumped to his feet when she approached.
"Is Jamie all right? Do you need something?"
His words halted her steps. The concern shining in his ice-blue eyes was evident.
"Jamie is fine. I came to talk with you."
She waited for what he would do next. The only time she sought him out was when she needed him to do something, and that was never very often. She had learned the hard way with D'Artaeus that he liked distance between himself and others.
"Then talk."
She licked her lips as she struggled to find the words. Her fear was great, but she didn't wish for him to know.
"Did the old crone back at the village say something to you about a key?"
"Why?"
he asked, his voice hard and clipped. Because we don't have long.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?